The mass murderer, Dr. Harold Shipman, definitely killed at least 215 people, and according to an official report, there were possibly another 45 victims.
It was here at the Royal Courts of Justice in London, in June 2001, as the lawyer for the families of those murdered by Harold Shipman, we won the right to have a public inquiry. That process later unearthed the extent of Shipman's crimes and exposed systemic failings in the NHS. Over the last few years, public inquiries following human tragedy have become part of the fabric of our public life. But do they do any good? My name's Anne Alexander, and in this week's analysis, I'll be asking those at the very heart of the inquiry process, some speaking publicly for the first time, about the effectiveness of the system, how it really works, and where the lessons are actually learned for the future.
The way in which Shipman could kill, face the relatives, and walk away unsuspected would have been dismissed as fanciful if it had been described in a work of fiction.
That was Dame Janet Smith, who chaired the Shipman Inquiry. In this programme, I talk to the insiders who work within the inquiry process and ask, does the system really work? Richard Lissack QC has been involved in 9 inquiries and is the editor of a forthcoming book entitled, Believe It or Not, Public Inquiries.
Usually, inquiries are born of some sort of major disaster or matter of real controversy where there is suspicion in part of the community involved, be it farmers in Foot and Mouth, be it parents whose babies died at Bristol Royal Infirmary, be it families whose relations were murdered by Harold Shipman, be it victims of rail crashes. They seek from that inquiry the solace of 3 things. 1, transparent independence from government and state. 2, they seek independence in the chair. They look to the chair to be independent. 3, they look to the fact that it will be held in public with proper scrutiny, open to all, as being a powerful guardian of the truth coming out.
I'll be turning to those central issues later, but first, how does an inquiry come about? In the early 90s, 29 babies died after heart surgery at the Bristol Royal Infirmary. One of them was Daniel Willis, who died following surgery for a congenital malformation when he was just 7 days old. His mother, Michaela Willis, initially accepted his death was inevitable. But later, when the scandal broke, she started questioning how and why her son had died. She contacted the hospital, but they refused to talk to her.
Even now, I still don't actually really understand why. We were told that there was an investigation underway. All we wanted to know was to have answers why people were saying, actually, there's something wrong. And ironically, we couldn't even get a lawyer to represent us in those days. We had to go to a licensing lawyer who was a friend of ours.
What did you expect a lawyer to do at the beginning when you first thought about taking legal advice?
We didn't want to pursue a medical negligence claim or anything like that. It was just we wanted somebody to open doors for us. So we thought the only way was actually to go via the legal route.
So in other words, you weren't seeking compensation, you wanted an explanation.
Absolutely, always. We never wanted to blame anybody, we actually just wanted to find out what had happened.
She went on to set up the Bristol Children Heart Action Group with other parents. They weren't satisfied that simply disciplining the doctors involved was good enough. They believed there were systemic failings which had to be identified and addressed and wanted a full inquiry.